Welcome to the University of the Free State Career Services podcast, where we talk to experts about the ins and outs of jobs and share tips that will give you a grip on your future career.
Hello and welcome. I am Kate Boone and today I'm in conversation with Rebecca Swartz. Rebecca Swartz is a senior lecturer in history at the University of the Free State. She has researched and written histories of education and childhood. Her first monograph, Education and Empire, Children, Race and Humanitarianism in the British Settler Colonies, 1833 to 1880, was published in 2019. She's currently working on histories of childhood, labor and freedom in the post-emancipation Cape Colony, an associate researcher for the University of the Free State History Project. Hi, Rebecca. Welcome to the Career Podcast. And how are you today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for your time. So I'm going to start with two icebreaker questions. The first one I want to find out from you, do you have a go-to karaoke song and what is it?
A go-to karaoke song? Wow. I haven't done a lot of karaoke in my life. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember the last time that I did karaoke, but I do enjoy a good Aretha Franklin kind of hit.
Yes, love it. She's a favorite, that one. Then if you could eat one meal for the rest of your life, what would it be?
I think it would be sushi for me. I love sushi. I could eat sushi probably three meals a day every day.
Oh, wow. I think you're the second person I'm asking just in this day who's mentioned sushi. Is it really that much of like a favorite?
It really is. I love the flavors. I love that it's kind of communal eating, bite size. Yeah, it really is the best.
So, Rebecca, before we unpack your job and what it is that you do as a senior lecturer in history, tell me about the best day in your career. When was it and what happened?
I mean, I think there've been good days for me in terms of, you know, hearing that I got the job at UFS was a very momentous occasion because I had been a postdoctoral fellow for many years. And so that was really exciting. But probably the best kind of day or best days was when I heard that my first book had won two international awards. That was super exciting. So it won an award for the best book on the history of childhood and youth, published in a particular year. And then I won another award from the International Standing Conference on the History of Education. And that felt really good because it was research that I'd been working on for a really long time, since my PhD. And so to get that kind of recognition felt really, really good.
That's beautiful. And congratulations on the amazing work you've also been able to do. Now, let's start by reflecting on your background. So growing up as a little girl, thinking about your interests and your passions, were you always interested in history?
I was. I always enjoyed history a lot as a school subject. I was always interested in that. But I think I was also very interested in reading. So reading quite a lot, doing quite a lot of writing, and interested in different kinds of research. And I grew up in a household where there were lots of people who were oriented that way anyway. And so that was really helpful in thinking about this as a potential career path.
Yeah. So you really weren't just like the boring one in the family.
No, definitely not.
That's beautiful to know. Now, just to provide our listeners and myself with some insight, how would you explain the study or the specialization in histories of education and childhood? So what is it especially about?
Okay, so my research is specifically about how, it has been about two kind of things. The first is about how education systems in colonial contexts, and I've looked in particular at South African context, but then also at other places like Australia and the Caribbean, and New Zealand to a lesser extent, how education systems were set up, who was providing education in those places. So it was often a combination of government and missionaries, and how those education systems were implicated in the creation of racial categories in the colonies. In other words, what I'm interested in is how they were different systems of education for different races of people, for different kinds of people in colonial contexts, and what the implications of that were for the kinds of education that they were given. So that's the history of education side. That's what I've looked at. And then for the history of childhood side, what I'm interested in is how ideas about what it meant to be a child, or what it means to be a child, or how we should treat children or think about children, have changed over time. So all of our ideas about children needing, for example, to go to school, not to work, these ideas emerged in specific historical contexts and moments. And so I'm interested in exploring those times, and how the idea of who counted as a child and why changed over time.
So tell me a bit about your journey then as a student, starting from your undergraduate years. Where did your academic journey start? And would you say it was a straight or a winding road for you?
I mean, I think the winding part for me came a little bit later in my career. So I started off, I went straight from school into university, at the University of Cape Town, doing a BA, Bachelor of Arts, and my majors were history and anthropology. And from the beginning, history was very clearly what I enjoyed the most, what I excelled at, and I really enjoyed the methods. I enjoyed doing archival research, and having that chance to work with old documents and understand something about the past. And so then I continued with a history honors and then a master's, also at the University of Cape Town. And then after that, I got a scholarship to study abroad. So I went to the UK and I did my PhD there. And then I came back to South Africa after that in 2015. And then after that, I suppose that's really where the winding part kind of started, because I did a series of postdoctoral fellowships. It ended up being 5 years at different institutions. So I was at UCT for 2 years, and then I was at Stellenbosch for a year, and then I came to the Free State, and then eventually I got my job here in the history department in 2021.
True. So such an interesting journey. We're going to travel through time, and something similar maybe to your journey of, you know, moving around and traveling. But we're going to dream now. And let's say you didn't pursue history and you weren't able to do anything related to the social sciences field. Is there anything else that you would have liked to do?
Sure, nothing social science related.
No, that's going to be easy.
It's so hard for me to think about that now, because your whole way of thinking and of understanding the world gets so shaped by the career that you're in and the path you've chosen to take. I mean, sometimes I think, so I do a lot of sewing in my spare time. Okay. And sometimes I think like, oh, that would have been like nice. What if I had done some kind of fashion design, that kind of a creative thing? But I think the reason why I still enjoy sewing is because it's a hobby and I don't have the pressure on it. So, yeah.
No,
it's a
definitely.
Hard question.
No, I know it always is, but I think it also just, you know, sometimes for me brings that human element to people, that we're so multidimensional, and as much as we become so consumed in the work that we do and our specializations, but there's always, you know, a different aspect. And something else that you're interested in that also just sometimes makes you come alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Now back to real life. You are, I feel, establishing such a footprint in the social sciences research. You're also an associate researcher for the University of the Free State, it's a history project, right? So I want to hear from you, what would you really say makes you good at your job?
Well, I think to be a good historian, you have to be incredibly patient, because the process of historical research can often be incredibly time consuming. So you can go to the archives, that's the place where all of our old documents are kept, and you can go for a week and find absolutely nothing that's relevant to your research. And good historians are persistent and patient, so we'll keep going back and keep looking and keep trying and change directions if we need to. So I think you need to be persistent but also adaptable, to think about, okay, I'm not finding what I was looking for. What am I finding? And what else might be interesting for me? So I think that's part of it. But then I think you also just need to, you know, have a real interest in the topic that you've decided to study and be passionate about it, because it can be incredibly time consuming. So the book that I'm working on at the moment, I've been doing research on that same project since 2019. And if you don't really care about the research, if you're not really committed, and you don't see it as valuable and important, it's very hard to keep up your motivation for 5 years. And that's generally, you know, how long it takes to write good history books, because of how time consuming the process of working in the archives can be.
Definitely. And I think, Rebecca, just listening to you, in a previous conversation that I had, I also asked, you know, a colleague, and we spoke, asked them about those important traits and attributes that one needs to have, especially in the workspace and just in building and establishing a career now. And listening to you again in your response, you're really touching on those attributes again, and the importance of being patient and the importance of being adaptable. I want you to really just go in deeper with that. And if someone were listening now would like to follow or pursue a similar career path as you, and just also find their sweet spot, you know, in the subject of history, either as a researcher or a teacher, you know, what advice would you give them to best prepare themselves?
I think you have to be open to the research taking you on a journey that maybe you can't anticipate at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you might go and set off with a particular research question in mind, but everything that you find shows you a completely different story or takes you on a different pathway. And I think that can be really difficult, the less experienced you are. You know, the first time it happens, you think like, oh no, I'm doing something wrong, mm-hmm. because I'm not finding what I thought I would find. But as you get more experienced, you realize that's actually part of the process and it's important. And it's often very meaningful when you find something different. So I would say that. And then I would also say, you know, it's just incredibly important to be consistent. So to keep working at something, to chip away at it, because the research takes a very long time. And, you know, for the most part, the records that we're looking at are not available digitally. So it takes a long time. You've got to travel to wherever you want to go and conduct research. And you have to just keep maintaining a consistent kind of level of engagement and work. And there's no way that you can produce good historical research or writing without working consistently over a long period of time.
Oh, definitely. And that is absolutely true. So I always say no job is good, and we know every job has its, you know, not so good days. And I want to find out now from you, what would you then say is really the hard or the mundane part of the work you do?
I enjoy most parts of my job a huge amount. I think the challenges at the moment are structural rather than individual. Mm-hmm. So increasingly, we've got very, very large classes. So I'm currently teaching our first year class, and it's 550 students. And that's a very big group to teach, to introduce to a discipline, to have really meaningful interactions is very difficult when it's such a big group of students. And so that's something that I find quite challenging is how do you think about teaching in an environment like that, where you won't meet most of your students, you won't have a one-on-one conversation with most of them. That's really hard. You know, when it comes to honors level or when you're doing PhD supervision, you really start to develop a relationship with students and you can kind of get a sense of their strengths and weaknesses. You just can't do that in very, very large undergraduate classes. And then, of course, along with that comes a huge amount of administration and marking, which is always challenging.
Yes, definitely. Now, before we wrap up our conversation, or this part of the conversation, rather, share with us one secret about, you know, being a lecturer in history, something that someone on the outside would never guess.
I think maybe this isn't a secret. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it is or it isn't, but I think a lot of people from the outside think history is just learning dates and facts, and that's not what it is at all, especially at university level. And what we're really interested in is developing critical thinking skills and thinking in a really meaningful and contextualized way about the past and the present. So there's actually very little. I've got a terrible memory for dates. I can never remember dates. You know, and we've got the internet now, so that's great. But it's really about a way of analyzing and thinking about the past and a specific set of methods that makes a good history lecturer, I think, at university level.
Yeah, that's a totally different perspective from what I've, you know, always, I think, believed as well. I've always thought history is just dates and a good memory and that's it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Now, Rebecca, we've reached my second favorite part of the conversation, I always say, where I'm going to ask you five rapid fire questions. You don't need to think too hard. So the first thing that comes to your mind, you just say. It's a this or that. Okay. Are you ready for the fire questions?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Sweet or salty?
Sweet.
My favorite word is?
Oh, I'm panicking now. I'm like, I don't know any words. Cheese.
Okay. Finish this for me. Every morning I?
Wake up way too early because I have a toddler.
Cute. And last one. A wise historian once said?
Question everything.
Oh, perfect. Great. Rebecca, we've reached the end of our conversation and I don't know if you have any last words for our listeners or anyone else really. And any parting words?
No, thanks so much for the conversation. And I mean, I would just like to say, you know, I'm speaking for myself, but also for my colleagues in the Department of History here at UFS, that we are always really keen to engage with people who are interested in history. And I think that our courses are really exciting and give you a totally new perspective on the past. And, you know, the career path is often not as simple as maybe training in a profession like becoming a doctor or a lawyer or something like that. But the skills that you gain from a good undergraduate history training can be applied across so many different fields because you are taught a way of thinking. That's invaluable.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. And I think as an advisor and working so closely with students, especially where careers are concerned, this is really just the message we always try to push, or that seed that we really just try to plant in the students. So I now know if a student, if any of my students are interested in history, and especially those ones that major in history, I'm definitely referring to your office.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being open and for sharing your journey and just to being so vulnerable in this conversation. I thoroughly enjoyed it and I know our listeners will too.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
That's it for now. Listen to all our episodes to make sure that you get into the fast lane of career success.